This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
ongoing conflict in Unity State in South Sudan has forced the evacuation of 28 aid workers from one of the two counties hit by famine. Insecurity is hampering aid efforts throughout the country, prompting the United Nations to call for immediate, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, 24 of Kenya's 47 counties remain in a national drought emergency, and world leaders have been digesting the first speech to Congress by U.S. President Donald Trump.
We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: ongoing conflict in Unity State in South Sudan has forced the evacuation of 28 aid workers from one of the two counties hit by famine. Insecurity is hampering aid efforts throughout the country, prompting the United Nations to call for immediate, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
Last week, the United Nations and the South Sudan government declared Mayandit and Leer counties of Unity State famine-stricken. Over the weekend, insecurity forced 28 humanitarian workers to relocate from Mayandit. Gemma Connell is the deputy head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan.
So this is basically an indication of just how volatile these areas continue to be. Thankfully, this incident that took place this past week that caused the relocation was a minor incident, but it highlights how fragile the situation is and the types of challenges that we face on a week-to-week basis in operating in these areas.
VOA's South Sudan in Focus visited Leer County, also a famine-stricken area, and found civilians who say they have survived on water lilies and wild fruits for the past 3 years. Villagers also told VOA they are unable to farm the land due to sporadic military attacks and were forced to live in the bush and swamps. A UN statement listed a series of recent events, including violence, looting, and denial of humanitarian access in Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Central Equatoria that hampered humanitarian operations and placed civilians at risk, and most recently, the relocation of aid workers from Mayandit County.
We've been negotiating intensively behind the scenes in addition to the public advocacy to make sure that we can get these aid workers back in as soon as possible. And we're hopeful, all things going well, that we'll get them back on the ground in the coming days.
The aid workers in Mayandit were doing emergency nutrition screening and response and registering communities for food distribution. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, Eugene Owusu, has asked all parties to ensure immediate, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access across the country. Owusu says the South Sudanese president has reassured the United Nations that all humanitarian organizations will have unimpeded access to needy populations across the country. VOA requests for response from the presidential spokesman were not immediately returned. A UN and South Sudan government report says the famine is affecting more than 100,000 people, with 1 million people on the brink. Roughly half of South Sudan's population is projected to be severely food insecure by July. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Kenya, 24 of the country's 47 counties remain in a national drought emergency. The emergency was declared February 10th because of well below average precipitation in both the short and long seasons. If this year's rain is also well below average, UN humanitarian officials say, conditions will deteriorate. Right now, 2.7 million people in Kenya face acute food insecurity. That's triple the number reported last year at this time. They are also in urgent need of safe drinking water. Nearly 360,000 children, pregnant and breastfeeding women are acutely malnourished. The UN reports that harsh conditions have led to an increased risk of domestic and sexual violence, as well as child abuse, exploitation, and labor.
Mm-hmm. World leaders have been digesting U.S. President Donald Trump's first speech to Congress last night. The U.S. president spoke about the United States' commitment to NATO and his plan to forge a new global trade system. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Donald Trump's speech may have been directed at a domestic audience. The president repeatedly pledged to put America first, but this was a performance watched around the world.
It is American leadership based on vital security interests that we share with our allies all across the globe. We strongly support NATO, an alliance forged through the bonds of two world wars that dethroned fascism and the Cold War and defeated communism. But our partners must meet their financial obligations.
The warmer tone has been welcomed, says Ian Bond of the London-based Centre for European Reform, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
He didn't repeat the suggestion that it was obsolete, and he did stress the importance of NATO. But underneath that, he's still talking in terms of NATO countries paying their bills as though, you know, America is a kind of bodyguard service.
President Trump pledged one of the largest increases in national defense spending in American history.
Even many Republicans, I think, are telling him that it's a mistake to gut U.S. overseas development assistance and the State Department in order to fund this very large increase in military spending.
A scaling back of U.S. involvement overseas is likely to be seen as an opportunity for the world's second largest economy, says David Kelly, director of research at China Policy, a Beijing-based research group.
Once again, Trump has left large spaces open for China to, in a sense, exploit in diplomatic terms.
Beijing was singled out by Donald Trump as he repeated accusations that the global trade system is not benefiting America.
We've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001.
Trump did not directly mention the travel ban on citizens from seven Muslim-majority countries that was struck down by the courts. Beyond his vow to extinguish the Islamic State terror group, there was no mention of Africa, a region looking for direction on Trump's future engagement, says Stephen Groost of the South African Institute of International Affairs.
We haven't really seen very much at all out of this administration in this first month on what his Africa policy is going to be. We don't have an Assistant Secretary of State. We have many ambassadorships that are vacant, South Africa being one of them.
The more measured tone of the speech has been generally welcomed, but analysts say many world leaders want more policy detail on President Trump's promise of a new chapter of American greatness. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thousands of nurses went on strike today at Zimbabwe state hospitals. AP quotes the head of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, Enoch Dongo, as saying they will only return when there's a firm commitment their bonuses will be paid. Nurses and other government workers in Zimbabwe have yet to receive their traditional annual bonuses. The government has been struggling with a poor economy and a cash crunch. It has offered to replace the bonuses with offers of land. Dongo says, however, the nurses want cash, not land. Meanwhile, state hospital doctors in Zimbabwe have been on strike since February 15th. Army and police doctors have been sent to the hospitals to replace them.
Also, Zimbabwean tobacco dealers will start auctioning their harvest soon. Kuzai Zvinovashi reports on this year's farming season and trade prospects.
Around the world, Zimbabwe may have a terrible reputation for politics, but a very good one for the quality of its tobacco. What will the harvest be like this year? Farmers are optimistic. Ishaune Sumoyo is the spokesperson for the Tobacco Industry and Marketing Board.
The 2016 farming season, we had shortage of water and we had to practice water conservation methods. And this 2017 season, where too much rains, whereby we experienced flash floods, we experienced leaching and hailstorm.
Last year's trading was affected by some corrupt elements, but Moyo says they have made sure that doesn't happen this season.
We're excited because this season also have e-marketing, which is going to try and mitigate some of challenges we're facing in the industry, such as ticket tampering.
Last year, Zimbabwe's ongoing cash crisis left farmers struggling to get their money. Many were stuck in long lines and some even sleeping outside the banks. Moyo says they are working on solving that.
We have educated farmers. We used to have a scenario whereby farmers would come to the floors, sell and get their money as cash. But then we've been educating them on the use of plastic money.
Tobacco remains one of the lucrative industries in Zimbabwe. Last year, the golden leaf, as it is widely known, brought in just over $1 billion. Farmers are hoping this year will be just as profitable. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The South African government forecasts a bumper crop of maize this year, up 79% over last year's dismal harvest. Reuters reports fall army worms that have decimated crops in neighboring Zimbabwe have been limited in South Africa due to good rains and the use of genetically modified crops. Maize prices are at a 2.5-year low, but meat prices could rise because many cattle were culled during last year's drought. South Africa's consumer inflation rate in January was 6.8%, down 0.2 from December. The inflation rate for food dropped 0.3 in January to 11.4%.
Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. While many African migrants survived the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea from the shores of Libya to Italy, but they often find that life in a new country is not what they expected it to be. Some spend their days in migrant camps, in parks, or just loitering about because they cannot find work. They are shocked that despite everything they risk, their new lives offer so few opportunities. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the life-changing experience of being a refugee or migrant in Italy and what some Italians want the government to do to help them.
Well, many migrants are struggling in Italy. The economy is in bad shape. Unemployment is very high, as high as 40% among young people. So after making, as we know, a very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean, there's often a lot of disappointment for migrants. And they struggle to find work, selling merchandise on the street, working in fruit and vegetable markets, and often picking fruit and vegetables in the countryside. But some are also struggling in this society, which is probably dealing with the fact that it is now multicultural and not quite sure how to handle this huge influx of migrants that we've seen in the last 12 months in particular.
I understand, too, that the Italian government is trying to clear out an area of refugees in a particular region.
Yes, this took place in the area near Foggia in southeast Italy, a region called Puglia. And police have been clearing out this area of shacks and houses in the countryside. Accusations and allegations that some of these migrants might be linked to criminal operations in the area. And this is, in effect, an anti-mafia investigation. It's interesting to see whether there is a link, a possible link, a criminal link between this camp that was hosting around 500 people from various ethnic groups, and whether there's a link between them and the operation of this camp, which is alleged to be operated by local mafia there.
If they are found that this is what is going on, would they just have them go back to the countries they came from, or would they be prosecuted?
Well, they're mostly North African, and it seems that they're being transferred from this area to other areas by bus. This is an issue that's come up quite a few times, particularly in country areas where migrants are being used to help on farms or to pick tomatoes or oranges in certain parts of Italy. This crossover between the operations in the countryside and alleged criminal groups or mafia. Often the migrants themselves are just victims of this kind of manipulation. And at this point, it's not very clear what is going on in this particular camp. camp. Certainly, there have been allegations in the media here that this camp where the Africans are living is deprived of any kind of health standards or hygienic standards, which are unacceptable.
Also, if you could share with us a very tragic story regarding a migrant who was trying to make his way into Italy.
This incident occurred on Monday night on board a train that was traveling from Como in the north of Italy to Switzerland. The victim was a migrant of African origin, and he attached himself to the roof of the train carriage. And as it was traveling through a tunnel, I believe, he was electrocuted. It's just such a tragic story, and made even worse because he had no documents. Nobody knows his name or where he came from. It's quite a shocking incident, and yet another one that indicates just how desperate many migrants are to leave Italy and try and move to other European countries. It's not the first time we've seen or heard of a tragedy like this.
Yes, that is a very tragic story. I understand also, Josephine, that there's going to be an anti-racist march or demonstration there. Can you tell us about that?
In the city of Naples today, there is a anti-racist demonstration taking place. This seems to involve students and community organizations who want to see a fairer deal for immigrants and refugees against what they consider to be policies of discrimination. They want to see the abolition of various prejudicial laws, what they consider to be prejudicial, and also they're against the opening of new processing centres that are going to be opening in various parts of Italy, because they see that many migrants have a right to work and live in Italy, and they want to see the release of more than 10,000 work permits that are currently being blocked, they claim, by the police in Naples. So that's an interesting move that we're seeing on behalf of migrants today.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Improving housing conditions may provide a boost to malaria prevention at a time when other efforts may be losing steam, according to a new research, as Africa rapidly moves away from traditional mud and thatch housing. Experts see a chance for architects and urban planners to join the fight against the disease. Steve Barragona has details.
Sub-Saharan Africa is urbanizing faster than almost any other part of the world. Public health experts should take advantage of that, says University of Oxford epidemiologist Lucy Tustin.
We do have an opportunity to tap into the changes that are ongoing in many parts of Africa in order to build healthier housing.
More than 400,000 people died of malaria in 2015, mainly children in Africa. Insecticide-treated bed nets and indoor spraying have helped bring rates down by 40% since 2000. But mosquitoes are becoming resistant to the insecticides. New tools are needed. Tustin and her colleagues wondered if a change they had noticed could make a difference.
What we're seeing in many parts of Africa is a subtle transition from more traditional housing, which might have thatched roof and mud walls, towards metal tiled roof housing with concrete walls.
That should help, because the mosquitoes that carry the disease in Africa mainly bite indoors at night. More solid construction could keep the insects out. But there has not been much research on the subject. In a new study in the journal PLOS Medicine, Tustin and colleagues looked at health and demographic surveys from 21 countries. They found that children living in modern construction homes were 9 to 14% less likely to have malaria than those who lived in traditional housing. That's similar to the level of protection provided by insecticide-treated bed nets.
What this suggests is that housing could be an important tool in tackling malaria.
It's not exactly a new idea. Tustin notes that screened windows and doors were the very first effective technique used to prevent the disease in the early 20th century. But the point, she says, is that a lot of new housing is going to be built in Africa as the continent urbanizes.
We can leverage those changes, but to do so, it's important that health specialists reach beyond the health sector and work closely with architects, urban policymakers, and national governments.
Lucy Tustin says they could help build malaria prevention into the habitat of the continent's growing cities. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
A diet that mimics fasting temporarily put mice in a starvation state and reversed diabetes in the animals, according to the findings of a new study. VOA's Jessica Berman reports the diet was also shown to reduce the risk factors in people with pre-diabetes.
Research by investigators at the University of Southern California showed the special fast-mimicking diet triggers the production of insulin-producing cells in mice with diabetes. The study was published in the journal Cell. In humans, a study of the diet showed a reduction in risk factors for diabetes, such as elevated blood sugar, in people who were headed toward development of the disease. An article on the diet in humans appeared in Science Translational Medicine. In both type 1 diabetes and in the later stages of type 2 diabetes, the beta cells in the pancreas are destroyed. But the diet appears to reboot the body, says the study authors, switching on genes that trigger the release of stem cells, master cells responsible for organ development. However, it's not just fasting that restores insulin levels. Scientists say careful refeeding after the brief starvation diet with specially calibrated nutrients is critical to kickstarting the production of new beta cells. The process of stem cell activation is the same one seen in embryos to stimulate organ growth, according to USC Longevity Institute Director Walter Longo, a professor of gerontology who was senior author of both studies. He says the fasting-mimicking diet can be used to reprogram cells without any genetic alterations.
So basically the system is using some of the same program that we use during embryonic and fetal development to regenerate the pancreas once the food comes back around. And that's the trick, you know, that it's not so much the starvation, it's really the combination of the starvation and the refeeding. And the refeeding has got to be a high nourishment one.
In the human trial, participants were given a high-fat, low-calorie, low-protein diet of between 800 and 1100 calories daily for 5 days in a row, each month for 3 months. Following each fast, the participants were refed with nutrient-rich foods. Researchers found that fasting triggered the production of a protein called NGN3, which generated new healthy beta cells that secreted insulin. They saw production of insulin in a dish of pancreatic cells extracted from mice and from healthy human donors and patients with both types of diabetes. In mice placed on the diet for 4 days, the scientists saw that damaged insulin-producing cells were replaced with new functioning ones. But Longo says people with diabetes should not try the diet at home because it can drop blood sugar to perilously low levels if they don't know what they're doing.
We warn people that, particularly that type 1 or people that, patients that inject themselves with insulin, they could be very risky and even lethal.
Longo says investigators are poised to begin larger human clinical trials of the fasting-mimicking diet in the next 6 months. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Somalia as the country moves forward under the leadership of newly elected President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop.
Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.